Welcome, Capital Risers. On today's show, David Lilly came on to talk about scaling, building a team, business infrastructure, and marketing within multifamily syndications. We also explored the velocity of capital versus generational wealth, got into some exit strategies, and talked about asset class selection. If you'd like to explore partnerships with me, talk shop on capital raising, or hire me as a coach, use the scheduling link in the show notes. With that, it's Capital Raiser Show, episode 255, and it starts now. Rock and roll, I got David Lilly on the Capital Raiser Show. Welcome, man. How you doing?
Doing fantastic, Ruben. How are you?
Good, man. Capital Raiser Show season 3 now brought to you by my friends at pitchdecks.com. Dude, so very excited to have you here. We're going to talk shop about capital raising, about syndication. Before we go down those roads, though, and discuss your business model and whatnot, tell us a little bit about your background, how you got into multifamily syndication and raising capital and stuff.
So it started in 2013 with the purchase of my first single family rental. And after that point, kind of decided pretty quick real estate was where I wanted to focus my investing and invest my money. And so the next question was, how do I scale this? Continue to buy single family rentals or just take a leap into multifamily? And so that's what I did. 2018, we bought a 6-unit multifamily property, and now we're at 336 units in Dallas and another 196 under contract. It's been a fun couple of years.
Sweet. So how many deals does that consist of?
This 196 that we have under contract right now is our 8th deal. So we've done 7 acquisitions so far.
Very cool. Tell us about the deals that you used to do, because you mentioned a 6-unit to start. Mm-hmm. I'm sure, did it start going exponentially? Did you just make the leap to like 30, 40 units? Did you start doing stuff that you could have property management on site? Tell me about the scaling of your business.
So it went from 6 to 16, and then we threw a self-storage facility in there, 262 units of self-storage, and 67 units, 136, 114 after that. And now there's an 86 unit in there, now 196. So yeah, it has been pretty exponential growth.
Have you gone full cycle on anything?
We have 3. We've gone full cycle on 3 so far.
Okay, cool. And then so in the future, what kind of stuff do you want to purchase? Is it going to be all multifamily? Are you going to mix in some self-storage or any other kind of multifamily?
We'll definitely mix in some self-storage. I'd love to get into industrial, but right now is we went vertical this year with property management in-house. So we're focused on building that out. So we want to stay focused on multifamily, but definitely industrial and self-storage in the future. Up until now, our best returns have been that self-storage facility. So definitely opportunity there.
You started integrating vertically with property management. Is that what I heard?
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. So you have employees or are they independent contractors? How does that work?
There's a mix of both. Most are employees. Yeah. We've got about 12 now across the 336 units.
I want to hear about that. Not the scaling of acquisitions, but the scaling internally of your company, like growing employees, because a lot of syndicators, just like 1, 2, 3, 4 person teams. And then some of them within a few years or after multiple years, they get to 25 employees or 50, or, you know, like Zach Captain Stall now has got like 200 or something like that. Yeah. Tell me about what's this been like getting employees, managing employees, putting in infrastructure so that everybody's on the same page. What has that been like for you?
It's tough. And yeah, there's a reason why a lot of people don't want to get into property management. It's extremely tough. Sourcing staff, probably the toughest part of everything. But the growth is fast. With this 196 unit, we're going to bolt on another 5 or 6 employees right there. So we've got a goal of acquiring 2,000 units in 2023. That's going to be a lot of people to source and add.
So everything that you do, you guys are the operators on. You guys don't co-GP with people.
No, we've only ever sponsored our deals. So we have some co-GP partners on these deals. But yeah, we've only ever sponsored our own deals that we're boots on the ground. We're the operator.
And then so your partners, the ones that you do business, these are going to be the same partners that you work with in multiple years into the future?
Predominantly, yeah. Some of the KPs or GPs have been pretty much the same since we started. But the guys on my team, the REAP Capital team, they're employees that work for me.
So how did you create your partnership with the Reed Capital guys?
One I worked with at a previous job, and the other, we just kind of got connected over Bigger Pockets, actually. So he wanted to make a career change, wanted to get into real estate, worked for me part-time, and then brought both those guys on full-time this year, actually. So up until this year, it was one-man show. So it's been some good, slow, steady growth, and got a great team in place now.
You mentioned earlier somebody that does investor relations. Do they get paid as an employee or are they a partner?
He is structured as a contractor, so he can take advantage of the massive depreciation we get. But also, my other employee is a true W-2 employee, but looking to take advantage of going contractor route in the future just to take advantage of the real estate professional status.
In the beginning days when you were doing houses, how are you raising capital? Let's kind of go into the progression of your capital raising knowledge and things that you were doing. So back in those days, what were you doing to raise capital?
Really, it was started with all my own money. I'm a former Marine, so military background. So to get started, I utilized a VA loan, bought my first home, lived in it for 2 years, I believe, and then bought the next home with a VA loan. Zero down, you're paying closing costs. And then renting the first home out. And so I kind of continued to do that. And then that first 6-unit multifamily, I put up 57% of the capital needed. And I had 3 other partners. My parents were one, a friend was the other, and then a friend of his was the 4th. So that's really how it started. And then from there, it's just all word of mouth. They had a good experience. They told their friends and family who got excited, and here we are.
So that first 6-unit was a JV partnership. Some Correct. People don't consider JVs a source of raising capital.
Yeah, no, it wasn't a true syndication. That was structured as a JV.
But here's what I wanted to mention is like when I was doing my fourplexes back in 2011 and 2010, me and my partner would find the deals and manage and run the deals. And then we'd raise the capital from JV partners who had certain say of when the property sold, what we were going to do to it.
Right.
But we would manage and run the operations and they would give us their decisioning on what they wanted to have done. But we would take these properties down with none of our own money, which I considered a source of capital. Other people are like, no, that's not capital raising. That's just partnership creation. Some people have a different mindset. They're like, oh, raising capital means that you have a passive investor. And I would personally suggest that's not my philosophy, right?
Yeah, I would agree.
I think JV capital is a form of capital.
Absolutely.
Like a lot of different things. Just curious about that. Okay, so you take down your 6-unit with some people and then people start hearing and seeing you, a former Marine investor, having some success. So it was just referrals from there going forward, or was there anything that you were doing besides that? Like
no,
marketing?
Not really. Just, networking. Spending a lot of time on Bigger Pockets, trying to get some exposure there, learn as much as I can or could at the time. But that was really it. Yeah, it was all word of mouth.
And then at what point did you start raising from people that were not just referrals?
I would say with our 4th deal, I believe the 67 unit here in Dallas was our 4th acquisition. And that was the first one that we really started getting people completely outside our network.
How did you guys get people from completely outside of your network?
Again, just networking, being vocal on Bigger Pockets and different investing groups and getting our name out there.
That's fantastic. Networking has been huge for me. I think for a lot of people, they don't value it enough, or better said, they don't take the time to actually go out and network. Virtual networking 10 years ago or even 5 years ago wasn't quite a thing yet. But today it certainly is.
Right? Absolutely. I think social media is extremely important too. We've been trying to make a concentrated effort to utilize social media more. I've just always hated to be that guy, just blowing up social media. But this day and age, it is what it is. And it's definitely effective. I see it every day.
Did you or anybody on your team go on site to properties and shoot videos of you guys on the deals that you had taken down?
Yeah, we've taken pictures. We've done video, nothing of us like being on site. That's one of the things that we want to focus on in the future. We were just at a site visit today with some investors and and taking photos and video. So we're getting better at that part.
And what do you plan to do in the near future for increasing your social media presence and, you know, some of your other capital raising strategies?
Well, yeah. So up until now, we've been doing 506B raises, and we've got a 506C going on right now. So that's one of the things. Doing this 506C raise, which enables us to blast it out everywhere, generally solicit and advertise. That's one way.
And then, so what caused the transition of going from 506B to 506C? What did you?
Mainly the size. This is a $25 million deal. So your typical $25,000, $50,000 investor that we have been getting, that would be a lot, 50, 60 investors to manage probably. That's one reason. Going 506B, you can only have 35 sophisticated investors. That had kind of been probably the majority of our investors were non-accredited, sophisticated.
Interesting. Okay. And then, so what have you learned about communications, or has that been a big area of focus for you?
It's been an area that we've been focused on improving for sure. That's one of the reasons that I brought on one of the guys I brought on as investor relations. So that's his main focus, communication, constant updating, you know, monthly reporting packages sent out, monthly updates, and things like that. So I think it's really important.
On the co-GP side, when you're acquiring other people, how do you find the co-GPs? This was the question that was posed to me right before this call. It's like, how do you vet your capital raising co-GP partners? What would you answer to them? Just out of curiosity.
Most of the sponsors or KPs, the guys signing on the loan with me, had been guys that I've been friends with, known for a long time, one of which we went to elementary school together. So tons of trust in that guy. And then the other was a slow kind of evolution. He invested as an LP in the first deal that we worked together on, and then continued to invest in deals. And then he started tapping his network and found out that he could raise a significant amount of money. So we had that business relationship already. We had the chance to work together, and it just kind of, it grew. We started trusting each other more and more. He's a big part in this deal we have going on now.
So you mentioned that your goal was 2,000 units. How did you guys come up with that number? Is that a number that you guys requested buy-in from the entire team?
It's just a number that we talked about that may be aggressive, but achievable for sure. We should be closing out January with close to 200 units. So looking to get the next deal under contract right now. We're going to have to start stacking them up every month if we want to hit that number or start doing portfolio deals. But it's a lofty goal for us, but attainable, achievable.
And those units, you want them all in Dallas? Or are you guys expanding?
Not necessarily. Yeah, we've had plenty of deal flow here in Dallas so far. I think arguably the best market in the nation. You know, as long as we have enough deals to acquire here, we're going to focus here. But we have played in markets like Tampa and Phoenix and done really well there. I would be open to branching out either one of those markets, or I've been wanting to get in the Carolinas too. We're not opposed to investing out of state if it helps us hit that goal.
And did you get any mentors along the way, or was this all apprenticeship style?
Yeah, all self-taught. Yeah, by reading every book I could, learned by doing, read every post on Bigger Pockets, underwrote. Gosh, I spent the first year just underwriting several deals every single day, but I just didn't have anyone that I could tap as a mentor. But I think that would be good advice for someone looking to get into this business or grow. Have a mentor, I think it would make a huge difference. I probably would have avoided some mistakes had I had someone to lean on in that regard.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about Dallas. When I talk to most of the people that I interview on the show that are from Dallas, not all, I kind of want to compare these two different people that I've spoken to. A lot of them are people that have been mentored or have gone through multifamily syndication courses or group coaching or mentorship, mm-hmm. like Brad Sumrock. There's a lot of family wealth that lives in Dallas too. I've noticed that there's people with oil. There are a lot of people with very expensive trucks driving around, and they like to just start taking down properties with no mentors whatsoever. And they can do it there, I think, at a higher level than other places in their own town. Because I think you could say the same thing about Silicon Valley, but they can't invest in their own town. Tell me about the culture of Dallas. Compare those two, like the people that are coming up and the people that already have family wealth.
If you were very well connected, that would be the Highland Park area here in Dallas. You grew up in Highland Park. You organically have that network. You're probably not networking as hard as we've had to raise capital. It would definitely be easier for someone like that. But Dallas is a great place to invest.
Okay, cool. And then before we go into the lightning round, I'm curious about your business model. So you mentioned 506C deals. Tell me about the type of multifamily that you like. Is it B class, E class, A class?
It's always been C class, 60s, 70s vintage properties. Ideally, they're 100% classic value add. So that's what we look for. Now starting to really try to focus on the 80s built product. But, you know, B minus, C class, still needing a lot of renovations, a lot of capital injection.
And then how long do you want to hold these things? How are you underwriting them for 5 years, 10 years?
Yeah, our models are all based on a 5-year hold. Mostly we've done some modeling 3-year holds as well, but we always forecast over 5 years. Our average hold period has been 23 months. On our 3 full cycle deals, it's been average 23 month hold. So it's easy to get in and out throughout this market cycle when everything was just churning and burning, but maybe a different story moving forward over the next couple of years. We may be hitting that 3, 4, 5 year hold period. We'll see.
Any of these properties that you guys want to keep forever?
Not right now. I think my kind of broader strategy is exit 1031 exchange into a nicer, newer, higher quality asset. And then maybe one day that'll be a class A asset that maybe you hold on to that for forever, long term. That's something you can kind of pass your wealth on to your children and stuff like that, a class A asset. So potentially.
Yeah, I was curious about the legacy aspect and mm-hmm. and creating wealth for multiple generations. What are your concepts there?
I'm really IRR driven, focused on making the most amount of money in the short amount of time. So as long as we may not have to hold on to an asset forever to generate a ton of wealth, we can keep velocity of capital, keep recycling these deals, growing our portfolio and generating wealth like that.
And how long do you think you're going to be doing this for? How old are you, just out of curiosity?
33. Yeah. 33. So I plan to do this forever. I could retire and live a modest life right now from the short time I've been investing in real estate, but I'll probably maybe one day kind of semi-retire. Hopefully I'll have guys to take over this business for me and I can kind of sit back and sip a pina colada on the beach or something like that. But I'll probably always be working in real estate. I enjoy wheeling and dealing. It's fun.
Okay, that's fantastic. Actually, one more question, man. Anything about your military days that helps you in your syndication business today?
Yeah. Attention to detail and professionalism, discipline, integrity. That's one of the, being a steward of people's money, integrity is probably the most important thing. So yeah, all of those qualities, attributes were instilled in me throughout my military career and served me well now.
Cool, man. Thank you for your service. All right, so let's go into the lightning round. My first question to you is, what is the best vacation you have ever taken?
British Virgin Islands.
Sweet. What did you like about that?
When the time of year we went, it was right before hurricane season. So it was, we'd go on these incredible beaches. Smuggler's Cove was one on the island of Tortola, and there would be 3-4 people there. So it was like own private island for that time. Awesome. And it was just, yeah, it was awesome. Got on a boat, drove around from island to island, found a good spot to snorkel, jump off the boat. It was just an incredible trip.
I love it. Okay. Yeah. Do you have a favorite book of any kind?
I would have to say About Face by Colonel David Hackworth.
What is your secret getaway? Where do you like to go when you want to get away?
These days, the furthest place we can go, the 1 and 3-year-old, is probably Grayton Beach, Florida. So it's a 30A area right next to Seaside. And that's kind of our, and if we want to get away, we're going to Grayton Beach.
Cool. How long do you want to live?
In life?
In anything.
I think, yeah, by the time we're reaching 80 or 90, we'll probably be able to get replacement organs and hearts and stuff like that. So in that case, I wouldn't mind to live maybe 150, 200. I don't know. We'll see.
Interesting. That's awesome. So I like anybody that says over 100. Here's an interesting stat I'll throw in, is that even though medical advancements have been getting better over time, the life expectancy over the last 100 years has actually been decreasing because people are consuming so much sugar and carbs.
Oh yeah, I'm not surprised whatsoever.
Anyways, next question. Where do you want to travel to that you've never been to?
I'd say Budapest.
Oh, I love Budapest, both Buda and Pest. Oh, yeah. I want to get back there and take my wife. Best way to raise capital from your perspective?
It's networking. It's a team sport. Most people have heard that a lot, but it truly is. You can only go so far on your own. So it's definitely networking and getting a team together.
Do you have any strategies for breaking through limiting beliefs?
You just get out of your own way. I look at successful people all the time that are just not impressive and think, if these guys can do it, there's absolutely no reason that I can't do it. I mean, take it from me. 2016, I was a full-time firefighter making $40,000-$45,000 a year. Here I am now. So if I can do it with no college education, full-time firefighter, you know, just high school, public school grad, anybody can do it.
I like that. Okay. So here's a question that when I was interviewed, my partner posed to me. When was the last time you felt like a loser?
I don't know. I feel like a loser all the time. I still got an imposter syndrome. So kind of all the time.
A lot of entrepreneurs feel like that because we're always trying to scale and we don't feel like we're doing it quick enough. And we also have the problem of we try to compare ourselves to other people, which is a big mistake, guys.
It is. Yeah, it's hard not to do, but they're fleeting moments and you just push them away. It's all you can do. Focus on now and growing and doing what's inside your control.
Any entrepreneurial seeds that you want to plant in your kids as they grow older?
Absolutely. Yeah, they're a little young right now to bring around, bring to our properties and show them what it is we do. But yeah, that's definitely my plan. Hang around the office, have them go on site visits, probably lemonade stand in the near future.
Awesome. Love that. Okay, just three more questions. Do your spiritual philosophies have anything to do with your success in business?
Yeah, I would say so. I'm a Christian believer. If you don't get anything from that, doing the right thing, which goes back to integrity, I think is extremely important and kind of what guides me, always doing the right thing.
Excellent answer. Here's my trademark question. Have you ever experienced a miracle or had a near-death experience?
A lot in the military, absolutely.
Anything as a firefighter? Just out of curiosity.
Nothing near death. It's always kind of, I guess you could say, a near death experience, run into a house fully engulfed in flame, but it seemed pretty normal at the time.
I've heard some crazy stuff about firefighters running into buildings that were on fire.
Yeah.
So it's just curious. All right, last question brought to you by Shanna Amigo. She would like to know, what impact would you like to leave in the world?
I'd like to get to a place where we can give back more. So, a nonprofit is probably in the cards at some point for us. We've made it a point to give a good portion of any fees that we generate to various groups, St. Jude being one, after having kids, kind of near and dear to my heart now. So just being able to give back and make a difference, you know, help people.
Cool answers on the lightning round, and thanks for entertaining us on that. Shout out to the Capital Raiser Nation and to my company, Legacy Acquisitions, and our sponsors, Syndication Pro, the Family Office Club, and PitchDecks.com. Check out thecapitalraisershow.com and check out our sponsors there. David, how does the audience get a hold of you?
You can reach me by email. It's david@reapcap.com. That's reapcap.com. Or you can go to our website, fill out the contact form, reapcap.com.
Okay, cool. And then do you have any last words of wisdom for the aspiring capital raiser or syndicator as they scale in their business?
Get out there and get it done.
All right, cool, man. Well, thanks for coming on the show, dude. I really appreciate it,
man.
It's been fun getting
to
know you. I look forward to seeing you next time I'm in Dallas or hopefully at a conference or something down there. Thanks for coming on once again.
I appreciate it.
You bet, man. Peace and strength.